Thank you, Mr. Hicks. To the bishops of the church, President Swigert, and Ms. Anderson, our executive director, I have tonight the distinct honor and high privilege to introduce and present to you our speaker for this auspicious occasion, the 23rd anniversary or annual meeting banquet of Black Methodists for Church Renewal. I have discovered in my 36 years of ministry that when you're called upon to introduce a good friend, that you better write it down for fear not for what you might not say, but for what you might say that you should not say. Our speaker tonight is the Reverend Dr. Cornelius Linton Henderson, the District Superintendent of the Atlanta Emory District, the North Georgia Conference. I'm glad tonight to see that he made it. I got a little worried when I heard that Greyhound had gone on strike. Cornelius leaned over. We did not get our program until we were seated up here, and he looked at it and leaned over to me and said, "Jack, I see they have on here a speech or speaker." He said, "You know, I am a preacher." And I said to him, I said, "Don't let that bother you. When you get up, just remember that the difference between a speech and a sermon is the temperature." Dr. Henderson and I have been friends for 34 years, having first met on the hallowed grounds of the Hills of the Prophets, Gammon Theological Seminary in Atlanta, Georgia. It was there that we were joined by another classmate, one who gave great leadership to the church and was, until his untimely death, pastor of the Clark Memorial Church here in Nashville, Tennessee. I have reference to the late Reverend Dr. William Curtis Dobbins, Sr., and God bless his sacred memory tonight. Very early during our days at Gammon, the fellows would stand around and try to determine who among us would be destined for great leadership in the church, who had the voice for a large church and some of those things. And and the name of Cornelius Henderson would always rise to the top. The L had not been placed in his name at that time. He showed this type of leadership, however, as a student pastor in the old North Georgia Conference, and upon his graduation from Gammon Seminary in 1956, continued this leadership as a full-time pastor in several churches. Recognizing his leadership ability, he was appointed as executive secretary of Christian Education for the Georgia Conference. And from this appointment, he was appointed a district superintendent, holding later in his ministry the distinction with a few other persons as having served both as a superintendent in the central jurisdiction and in one of these other jurisdictions. For 6 years, Dr. Henderson gave leadership as a staff member of the General Board of Evangelism. And it was from this appointment that he was appointed as pastor of the Ben Hill Church in Atlanta, where under his leadership in 1984 and in 1985, Ben Hill Church received awards for evangelism in two areas, receiving the most members on confession of faith and the largest net increase in membership for the Atlanta College Park District. It was during his pastorate at Ben Hill that Ben Hill Church became one of the fastest growing churches in our connection. Dr. Henderson received his Bachelor of Arts degree from Clark College in Atlanta, and his Bachelor or Master of Divinity degree from Gammon Seminary. He also received a Master of Sacred Theology degree from the Interdenominational Theological Center. Both Gammon and Clark College awarded him the Doctor of Minister of Divinity degree, and he has been honored for his work in the Christian ministry by a number of other institutions and organizations. He serves on various boards and committees within the Georgia Conference, North Georgia Conference, and has been elected to 6 jurisdictional conferences and 4 general conferences. In addition, he has been a delegate to 2 World Methodist conferences. Dr. Henderson has served as interim president and as director of recruitment for Gammon Seminary, where he now serves as secretary of its board of trustees. He is also secretary of the General Board of Publications of the United Methodist Church and is a trustee of Clark Atlanta University, a life member of the NAACP and of the Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Contrary to popular belief, Dr. Henderson is not a native of Atlanta, but of Covington, Georgia, appearing on the scene on September the 12th in the year when the cost of the average house in America was $3,000. He has been married for 30 years to the former Dorothy Carruthers. They are the parents of a daughter, Leah, and one grandson, a working world traveler in Christian mission, a kind and compassionate friend, but more importantly, a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ, the Reverend Dr. Cornelius Linton Henderson.
Dr. Hayward, Mr. Swigert, Ms. Anderson, Reverend Hicks, bishops of the church, members of the dais, members of the board, members of BMCR, special guests, and friends and supporters of Black Methodists for church renewal. Twice in the history of this powerful organization, 23 years. You have been kind and gracious enough to allow me to be one of the speakers. We come tonight remembering those men and women, lay and clergy, statespersons, stalwart, dreamers and visionaries, shapers and molders. We come tonight remembering those trailblazers, pathfinders, course charters, waymakers, those who saw things as they were and asked why. Those who saw things as they weren't and asked why not. Please know that I am profoundly grateful to my classmate and personal friend, Dr. J.W. Hayward, for his kind words, most of which I appreciated, none of which I deserved, but more than 50% of which I was so glad to hear stated. Thank you, Jack. I'm reminded of a produce peddler who had a notorious reputation in a small country town in South Carolina. And one evening after he had loaded his wagon with the delicious vegetables, even fruits, and as it turned out, his reputation, his notoriety came about as a result of his very un-Christian-like vocabulary. He was known as one who would drive to point home with words that weren't supposed to be found in any Christian's expressions. But nevertheless, it had gotten out that the brother could cuss. That particular evening, as the wagon made its way toward the top of one of the tallest hills in that small town, the plank at the back of the wagon bounced up and out, and all of his cabbages and collards and lettuce and carrots and radishes and tomatoes, all of his bananas and oranges and apples and grapes went tumbling down the sharp incline into the dirt, into the ditch. Little children have an uncanny ability to detect when something that they aren't supposed to hear is about to be spoken. They stop their playing in the yards. The elderly people sitting on the porches, hung as it were, spit and tobacco juice suspended in midair. Waiting for the release that would forthrightly, quickly, and concisely and clearly ruminate out of this brother's mouth. Sensing he had a fairly good-sized captive audience and having a theatrical flair, he stood up as the fruit continued to go down in the ditches
He looked to his right, and he bowed. He looked to his left, and he bowed. And he shouted to the top of his voice, "Ladies and gentlemen, I is unequal to this task." Wouldn't it be nice if we could celebrate our gathering here tonight without reminders? Of course, we seriously ponder and gratefully acknowledge the fact that we are not here tonight because of our goodness. We are not here tonight because of our ingenuity. We are not here tonight because of our brilliance, our theological expertise, our academic credentials. No, no. We are here tonight because we stand on the shoulders of those who have gone on before. Someone has written a new little work entitled, "Pass Me Another Brick." You and I are simply brick masons. We did not invent the wall. No, no, we did not make the bricks. We did not invent the mortar. We did not drop the line. All we have done and all that we do is simply pass somebody another brick. Somebody else has sacrificed for 23 years in Cincinnati, founding parents, men and women, educators, brave, courageous Methodists, some of whom went against the grain by their very presence there, some of whom had threats aimed at them, some of whom were told, "Don't go there, things are all right." Wouldn't it be fine if we could celebrate unendingly, reminisce, reflect, ponder, pray, express our gratitude? Wouldn't it be fine? And we can and we must. But we do not come here tonight simply to look, or perhaps better put, simply to stare into the rearview mirror. No, no, that's not what that piece of rectangular shaped glass protruding from the roof or from the dash or from the window shield of your car. It's not there to stare into. It's merely there to glance at for a fleeting moment. If we would but spend our time gazing into the past, then death, destruction, catastrophe are imminent. We simply look up for a moment to catch a glimpse at that shaped, rectangular-shaped glass at where we've been, thank God, and then put our eyes back in front of us, for we've still got a long, long way to go. The darkest hour. I had accepted an invitation 2 years ago to go to a small town in Alabama for for watch night service. And Dorothy and I went over to Pascal's to get a morsel of food. As we entered and sat down, my host for the evening came in and flopped down beside me and in between my wife and me. I said, "Get up. I'm not here to deal with you now. You come later. I'm going to have a chance to court Dorothy." And he left, and she said, "Is that the way you talk to friends?" I said, "That's exactly the way you talk to friends." He left, but only to come back before I had finished my appetizer. I immediately invited him to retreat again. He left. He returned before the main course had been served, and this repeated itself several times. He finally got the message by the time we'd finished the meal. And he said, "Henderson, I'll drive. You get in the passenger seat, and Sister Henderson, you get in the back and rest." And we both obeyed. He drove our van. As we left Atlanta, proceeding westward, out past Six Flags, out beyond Douglasville, out beyond Carrollton, out beyond Villarica Temple, it soon dawned upon me that all of the cars we were encountering were headed towards Atlanta. It was storming. Walter, you recall 2 years ago, watch night, it was literally storming. And common sense said to me, "Fool, why? Why do you say yes so often when you ought by now to have learned to say no?" Nevertheless, I said, "I suppose I am a fool," to myself. And we traveled on. The farther away we got from Atlanta, the fewer cars we saw going the way we were headed, and seemingly the more car lights we met coming toward Atlanta. I said to myself, "Fool, now, the oldest and largest predominantly black Greek-led organization in the world is having its annual get-together tonight. Why are you leaving? Out of all the churches in metro Atlanta and Decatur and Douglasville and all of these towns, Marietta and Smyrna, why are you leaving? Why did you say yes?" It started storming. Winds tossed that little van from side to side. Dorothy decided she would nap. I decided I would take a nap, only to wake up and find the driver was also napping. I said to myself, "Somebody had better wake up," and we did. And finally we got to Alabama, and then we approached Anniston. As we neared the city limits of Anniston, he said, "Now, Henderson," I said, "What is it? What is it, Reverend?" He said, "Now, I didn't tell you this." I said, "No, don't come here with no surprises." He said, "The church that I'm serving is not up in Anniston." I said, no, don't do that to me tonight." He said, "It's at Chocolate Hollows. I said, "Chaka what?" And he said, "It's almost up in town, but not quite." I said, "Oh, Lord." We get to the place. It's 10 o'clock Atlanta time, the time for the service to begin, where we're in Atlanta, but 9 o'clock Alabama time, an hour early. Naturally, there are no cars at this small, deserted church, dirt lot. No one there but three of us in a storm, December 31, 2 years ago. We get out, get drenched between the van and the church, only a few feet. We get in. He says, I want to show you my study. I said, oh, this is great. There's a table, desk, chair, sofa, two drawer, file cabinet, and a phone, Russell McReynolds. And I said, this is great, wonderful study. He said, let me show you the fellowship hall. And we went across the hall. I said, all right, this is, looks good to me. He said, this is fellowship hall. He said, built under my administration. I've been here 15 years. I said, this is great, Reverend. There's a linoleum and and some tables and chairs. I said, this is a great, wonderful fellowship hall. Then we get in. He said, let me show you the kitchenette. And we look at the kitchenette, and there's a refrigerator and a stove and some dishes. Then we go in the pulpit and in the sanctuary, and he said, this is one mic, and I got two more under here. I said, Reverend, one is enough. Finally, some officers came, and then pianist, and then the choir, and we took off, prayer meeting, the whole 9 yards. I tried to say a word for the Lord. Then at 11:45, the preacher reached under the pulpit and retrieved a large brown paper bag of slightly used candles. The Lord said, get ready, Henderson. I'm going to give you the answer as to why you're here. He held up one small candle, and the Lord said, this is it. And he raised his question. Anybody here got a light? At our 23rd gathering of black Methodists for church renewal, I simply want to raise the question. Anybody here got a light? We're approaching our darkest hour economically. Less than 9 years, 8 years and 9 months, minus several days, we will be in the year 2000. Black African Americans, sons and daughters of Africa, will no longer be the major minority group in America. We will then become the second largest minority. With the removal of the wall between East and West Berlin, with the increased travels between the peoples of the world, the raising of quotas of immigrants coming to our soil, we are pushed further and further back economically. We spend more than we earn. We try to borrow our way out of debt. We pad fat wallets for other folks. There ought to be a place in Nashville big enough owned by us but we don't have it. And the bulk of the money we have spent this week coming to and living at country music capital of the world, Nashville, Davidson County, USA, will end up not in our pocketbooks, but in somebody else's. Anybody here got a light? Economically, we are approaching our darkest hour. Richard David Wynn said this some years ago, and I've used it tonight for the first time ever. I give him credit for having shared it with me. We are great lovers of shopping malls. And we take that plastic card when Bill was living, Dobbins. He, Jack, and some others of us, we used to pride ourselves on getting the largest number of charge cards. We ordered every kind on earth. Chevron, Ohio, Sohio, Gulf, Texaco, Amico. We got every card that they let us have. American Express, Diners, Carte Blanche, should have been Carte Noir. But it's carte blanche. We had every card nameable, and then they'd start calling for the money. In the words of Dick Wynn, we were buying stuff with those plastic cards, buying stuff we didn't need, with money we didn't have to impress folk we didn't like. Anybody here got a light? It's dark. Y'all, we're living in a dark world economically. The Asian community is rising up across the world, buying store after store after store in every city, in every county, on every continent, including this one. They employ their own folk. Work hard, live in the store, literally. Save their money, pool their resources, educate their children, turn off their television sets, unplug the stereo earphones from their children's ears and make them learn and make them become disciplined. So that the economic handwriting is on the wall. Educationally, we are approaching a dark hour. Our children learn how to fight before they learn how to read. They learn every dance that Prince and Michael and others put out, every lyric, every syllable, every note, and they cannot learn math and chemistry and English and literature and sociology and African history. They do not know, Brother Hicks, their heroes and sheroes. They don't hear their parents talking about them. Educationally, we are approaching our darkest hour. Our teachers are grossly underpaid, tremendously disrespected. Our schools have almost become pistol ranges, knife factories, drug centers. And when some of us in this room found ourselves as children, when you cut up at school, the teacher cut up a notch or two above you. And the principal would cut up a notch or two above that. By the time you got home, the word had beat you there, and your mama cut up. And by the time your daddy got home, he cut up what had not yet been cut up. But now you say, Cornelius, it's a new day. We don't believe in corporal punishment. I wish you'd tell the students that. Grossly underpaid, greatly disrespected. They have to spend most of their time trying to discipline. We pay our athletes tremendous salaries, and we are not against that. Brother Walter pastors most of the Atlanta Hawks. And we're not anti that. No, no. Evander Holyfield is a neighbor of ours, Lee Haney, to name a couple, but that's not the issue. The issue is that we may need to look again at our budgets and our resources. If we can pay a grown man $3 million a year to race up and down a rectangular-shaped place called a basketball court, surely we ought to be able to pay a school teacher $30,000. Economically, educationally, we're approaching our darkest hour. Politically, we've not yet arrived. We have more black elected officials now than we've ever had. And we have more mess in some instances than we've ever had. We applaud, support, bow toward, lift up our black elected officials, many of whom are here tonight. But running City Hall is not enough. We've got to get beyond the City Hall to the Bank Hall and the boardroom hall, where the real issues are decided. One candidate for a national office some years ago, and some of you are from that great state, cried out as he campaigned for the second highest office in this nation, "Elect me and I'll get crime off the streets." And he did, and carried it right slap in the middle of the White House. Politically, we're approaching our darkest hour. Racially, we've not yet overcome. Black Methodists or church renewal. I hope that the term black doesn't turn some of you off, even though you're here. Some Some are a little nervous about being grouped with black folk. Oh, I know that you and I've got to erase the negative stereotypes of blackness. Arthur Davis and Ruby Dee contend that out of 120 synonyms for blackness, 6 are derogatory. So by the time a child is 6 years of age, he or she has learned 60 ways to hate him or herself, and his or her counterpart has learned 60 to help him or her in the process. We still have not yet arrived racially. There are still some in the majority group, majority as far as America is concerned, but minority as far as the globe is concerned, still some who feel that God Almighty passed his divine genes onto them directly. And no matter how high you rise, or what office you aspire to hold, you are just a notch or two lower than they are. Anybody here got a light? Racially still dark. Did Gregory contends with some degree of accuracy, I'm sure, that the federal government spent $40 million to catch one black male snorting cocaine. We do not applaud the usage of drugs on the part of any person. But we have to remind ourselves as leaders of the church, lay and clergy alike, that we cannot afford the luxury of lives that do not indeed reflect the highest calling of the Lord Jesus Christ. We do indeed have to aspire, perspire for the higher ground. Socially, we are not quite there yet. Let's look at the racial darkness just a tiny bit further. The future of our race hangs in the balance of the challenge of the 90s. Survival of African Americans and Africans all over the world is not a given, and this problem must be effectively addressed in the next 10 years. The problem is not as simple as you and I would like to portray, but its complexity must be approached collectively. Collectively with determination, confidence, and resolve, if we are to survive on the face of this earth. We are losing our sense of community, if it's not already lost, and our people are going through a severe social crisis. Our mediocrity and leadership, in many instances, is ineffective. The notion that we face extinction in the next 25 to 40 years merit our careful analysis and deliberation. Except for 10% of our population, and over half of them are 2 paychecks away from poverty, African Americans are suffering an expansion of underclass population and a significant decrease in the so-called middle class. It is imperative that we respond to our crisis forcefully and with considerably more organization and cooperation than we ever have in the past. In Atlanta, preacher, colleague of Bishop Allen's years ago in Atlanta, now retired, Said he was in the wagon with his daddy. His daddy reached under the wagon seat and took the whip, the buggy whip, popped the whip, and a couple of grasshoppers lost their hind legs. He went up the road a little piece. He took the same whip, saw a couple of birds, and he popped it once, and a couple of the birds lost their tail feathers. He went on down the road, and he saw a beehive. He took his whip, cocked it back, slowly put it back under the seat. The boy asked his daddy, "Daddy, I saw you back there. You aimed, almost didn't even look, but aimed a little bit, and you cut off those grasshoppers' legs, and then you aimed, and the birds had lost their tail feathers. Why didn't you just go ahead and cut that beehive down?" He said, "Boy, the difference is them bees is organized." What did Cain Felder, one of the pioneers of this organization, say in Troubling the Waters? Cain said, "Black people need to trouble the waters. Black people need to trouble the waters with perspective, perspectives, and information not usually addressed by discrete theological curricula." Black people, said Dr. Felder, European, Euro-American, biblical scholars have asked questions and shaped answers within the framework of the racial, cultural, and gender presuppositions they hold in common. This quiet consensus has undermined the self-understanding and place in history of other racial and ethnic groups. Between 1978 and 1987, the black poverty rate increased from 30.6% to 33.1%. Between 1986 and 87, the black poverty rate rose while the white poverty rate declined slightly. In 1987, one-third of all black males, 15 to 24, lived in poverty, compared to 10% of all white males in the same age group. In 1987, 45% of all low-income blacks had incomes below half the poverty line, 69% more than in 1978. Blacks are 8 times more likely than non-black persons to be persistently poor, 21.1% compared with 2.7% of the majority group. Between 1970 and 80, it's dark. We cannot wallow in the successes of the past while the future is not yet charted out. Blacks make up 40% of all urban poor and 60% of the poor in underclass areas. Poor blacks are 5 times more likely to live in an extremely poor neighborhood than poor whites, 36% for us and 7% for them. Anybody here got a light? It's dark racially, and we cannot rock ourselves to sleep on the laurels of the past, but must be alert, alive, and sensitive to the challenges that are out in front of us. Socially, we're approaching a dark hour. We still got some black folk who aren't too happy being associated with other black folk. As long as they're the only one, they're all right. They gather in meetings of this kind and seem to be happy and content. But the moment the crowd disperses and the other folk begin to pour in, their whole countenances, character, disposition, facial expressions, the whole 10 yards have immediately changed. We've got some among our group, black folk, that are ashamed of our churches, proud of theirs, other folks, but ashamed of ours. We don't even like to let folk tell us that we are from Africa. You are not from Asia or Italy. You didn't come from Rome. Where else? Africa. Black Methodists. Black. Proud of our heritage, proud of our history, proud of our forebears, proud of our founding parents, proud of those who have had their way watered with tears, proud of those whose backs were bloody but unbent, proud of those men and women who took nothing, took chaos and made order, took nothing and made something, took the enormous portions of a pig and turned them into a delicacy. Anybody here got a light? We took what they threw away. My mama and your mama and grandparents, my dad could not read nor write, brought his check home to mom, and mama took it, prayed over it. And 7 children went to bed filled with something every night. Sometimes just something was buttermilk and cornbread. But it was wholesome and healthy. And we didn't know what cholesterol was. Go ahead, Doc. But we are now a new crowd with our filet mignon and our chicken bleu. And with our tenderloin, we've come socially, we are approaching. Doc, we cannot forget that we are one. Our unity must not be taken for granted. We celebrate the diversity within this corporate body. We don't all sing alike, not even black folk. We don't all preach alike or pray alike. We ought all give alike. We ought to give the Lord that which belongs to him, but we do not, unfortunately. Socially, we're approaching a dark hour. Anybody here got a light? But the greatest darkness that confronts us is not the economic or educational or political, not the social or the racial. But the greatest darkness is religious darkness. We are black Methodists for church renewal. The C in BMCR is not for club or clique or class, but for church. Anybody here got a light?
We cannot support the church if we aren't there. Your place and my place on Sunday mornings is at the Lord's house. But David declared out without apology, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Don't forsake the assembling together of the saints. Keep yourself present. You promised the Lord that you would be there. I will be loyal to the church and support it with my presence, my prayers, my gifts, and my service. Anybody here got a light? It's dark religiously. Yeah. Yeah. My third appointment was down at a place called Jonesboro. I'd been mowing the lawn out at 122 Waterson between the church and the parsonage when all of a sudden the lawnmower cut off, and as I tried to repair it, the trustee chair, Fred Hancock by name, came up the road, an older man, unlettered, untutored in terms of the affairs of academia. He, with a red flannel shirt on in August, high top shoes, straw hat, bib overalls, said, Brother Pastor, what's the problem? I wanted to say, Brother Hancock, can't you see it won't run? I did not, out of respect for this great churchman. I tried to finagle a few wires and to get it operative, but to no avail. I pulled the cord, it sputtered, but did not crank. He said, Brother Pastor, let me help you. I said, no, Brother Hancock, I can handle it. I took a looser wire or two and checked out the spark plug or two, and then I put everything back and pulled the cord, but to no degree of success. He said, Brother Pastor, I said, Brother Hancock, now you don't know what you're talking about. Let me fix it. I got it. I have a Bachelor of Arts degree from Clark College. I was president of student government at Clark. I was president of my fraternity at Clark. I lived with Dr. Brawl at Clark. I said, I've been to Gammon. I got a Bachelor of Divinity from Gammon. I was a member of Alpha Kappa Delta Sociological Honorary Society. He said, yes, sir, and you got a lawnmower that won't run. Brother Fred walked over, touched the lawnmower just a little bit, and he said, just a minute. And he said, Brother Pastor, I said, what is it, Brother Hancock? He said, it ain't gonna run until you put some gas in it. Anybody here with a light? Let's bow in utter reverent silence. Every head bowed. Every heart open, each eye closed. Lord, you told us in your word in Genesis 3:1-3, when you said, I am. And then, Lord, you spoke light into existence, as you said, let there be light, and there was light. And then, Lord, you said to us through your Son, our Savior Jesus Christ, in the 5th chapter of the gospel that bears the name of Saint Matthew, you are the lights of the world.
And in that classic Gospel of St. John, chapter 8, verse 12, you said, I am the light of the world. Our tanks are empty. Our lights are dimmed forever, except we abide in you. The light has come, and the darkness will never put it out. And so it is. And so it is.
Thank you. Thank you.